webcasting to the world.
Do you remember the moment you saw yourself and God and God and you, and you were one with the universe and God and everybody?
Knowing the truth about the gospel.
You were one with the prostitutes and pimps and priests and kings, and there was nobody on earth that was better than you nor less than you.
That we are all righteous.
And no one on earth was any less in Christ than anyone else.
That's Mike Williams, and this is the Gospel Revolution.
Welcome to the Gospel Revolution Powercast for the 31st of October 2013. Coming to you from the Gospel Revolution Studios right here in Nashville, Tennessee. And from Houston, Texas, please welcome the founder and president of the Gospel Revolution, Michael Williams.
Good morning, Barris Bartlett.
G'day, Mike. How are you?
You know what? I think I'm doing good, but I haven't asked anybody else what they think.
Let's leave it that way.
I think that's my key to having a happy life. I never ask anybody else what they think about me.
Well, it's not like they've got anything positive. All they've got is an opinion.
That's right. And then I know the facts.
Yeah, there you go, fella. Hey, what are we talking about today, Mike?
You know, I was so impressed with the show last week and the progression of getting to that point. I thought it's just been almost a surgical move all the way from the interview that you did with Michael Bond in Georgia, and it coming to this screeching halt of a great honesty of I don't know, and then us picking up on that and what is this personal aspect of the gospel. Then, of course, I knew there was things that needed to be said, but wasn't really sure how to say them. And then as a result of our live on the being recorded, of course, but this all took place just in the raw. This was not something pre-planned other than we're going to talk about it. And I started getting hit with questions. And had I not become acquainted with questions and finding that if I've got a question I can't answer, I have something very valuable in front of me. If I had not become very acquainted with that over the last 30 years, I think it would have been uncomfortable. But as it turned out, Barris, your questions, because most of the time when I hear you ask a question, I hear you with your finger on the pulse of people in the Gospel Revolution and other people, you know, on the planet. So we're going to follow up on this whole issue of the collective aspect of redemption and salvation and the personal aspect of it. I just want to retouch on that again. And we'll see what happens from there.
Sounds great to me. Let's just recap. To begin with, is it God that I am hearing when I hear my heart saying, hey, try this, do that? Is that God? If God and I are one, is this God? And if that's true, how do I live with that? How does that work on Monday morning when somebody passes me and gives me a dirty look? And they go, well, how does that help me? And last show we decided, because we're really important people who just decide things like this.
Right on the spot.
You know, someone once asked Freud, you know, all of those really important things that you come up with about sex. And he said, yes. They said, how do you reach those decisions? And he said, oh, that's easy. He said, I just flip a coin and see how I felt about it when it turns. Well, not quite like that here, family. But anyway, we discovered last week there is a personal aspect to the redemption of the world, and there is a collective aspect to the salvation of my mind. Does that sound like a good place for us to start from?
I think it's a really good place. And just like you were bringing that to that apex of what does this mean? Does this mean when I have lust or when this or that is happening, is that God? The personal aspect of that is that it is not being judged by God. it is not that that thought is God, or that when I follow my heart, I'm following God, even though the only way you can follow God is to follow your heart. But the main issue of the personal aspect of this, as we got into it, is this absence of guilt and judgment. This is the personal aspect of the impact. Whether people before or after the cross, the issue of the impact of the gospel, if you will, is what's happening now? What is happening now? Where does the gospel take Mike Williams individually, Barris Bartlett individually? Where does the gospel take the world collectively? So the personal aspect of this, first off, and I think it's a very wonderful thing for us to stop and embrace, it is not that we begin to determine that this thought or that thought, good or bad, whatever we might deem it to be, whatever society might deem it to be, is that it is God or not God. It is the fact that the God aspect of those things for humanity now is that my thoughts are not being judged by God. My decisions aren't being judged by God. My choice to serve humanity is not being rewarded by God. My choice to share the gospel is not being rewarded by God. I remember when we came to this point about even the aspect of people's giving, Barris. Now, and we kind of went into this part of it and surgically cut this part away because it's such a very important part of people's understanding about Christianity and the gospel, and that's the aspect of giving. And as we discussed this, we talked about how that giving was something that was no longer something that you do so God can bless you. So in the personal aspect of this, what this does then is it really does reveal the heart. It really does bring the heart to a point to where that you can discover what your heart is all about and what is there in your heart. So on the personal aspect of it, it literally removes this controlled aspect of relationship between God and man. It just it removes it. And the aspect of the fact that, you know, part of the fruit of the Spirit is self-control. And I begin to think, well, now, wait a minute. If the fruit of the Spirit is self-control, why would God give me self-control if he wants control? So the fact that I have jurisdiction over my life is God. It is personal.
Now, how does that jibe with, Father, please use me?
Yes, well, that's just the point, is that when we engage in prayers like that, I think we feel disassociated with the fact that we are one. I don't find anything wrong with praying the prayer to keep from micromanaging the way that people actually are able to express themselves in these things. You know, my heart's cry all of my life has been that my life would be productive in helping other people's lives. But the one thing that I did find out, Barris, is that no matter how much I pray about it, it's what I decide. This is not a decision that God has to make, nor is it something that God has to bring about for it to happen.
Now, you just said something that hit me hard. I can pray about it all I want, but in the end, I've still got to make the decision.
Exactly. And
do you suppose that we pray like that so that we can say, well, I prayed about it and the Lord led me or something?
I think we do use prayer to excuse our own decisions, whether they are things that are not good for anybody around us or good for everybody around us or only good for ourselves. I really do think that that's an aspect of it. You and I both were deeply involved in Christianity, and I certainly remember praying those prayers and justifying what I either said or did as being, well, you know, I'm sorry, you're just going to have to suck it up. That's what the Lord told me, you know.
So the first time you made a decision and felt good about it without praying about it, do you remember that time? And if you do, what did it feel like?
Well, I think, of course, the first decisive non-prayer that I ever did was to not pray and ask for forgiveness.
Well, that's a good example. So you came to a point, and you've told this story, and it's a good story, but it's how you came to the point of saying, I'm not going to confess this sin to ask for forgiveness. How did you feel when you did that? I mean, just straight afterwards, didn't you feel just a bit of hope he doesn't get me?
No, that all came before I didn't. I was so persuaded about confession of sin, I didn't think that a moment would pass until the consequences of this would be upon me. In some way, mentally, emotionally, at least mentally and emotionally. Because this need to communicate with God about my faults and my shortcomings, my sins, and to keep a clean slate. I will never forget that statement as long as I live from my Christian days, to keep a clean slate with God. I finally realized that I don't have to keep a clean slate with God because redemption and salvation isn't a clean slate. The slate has been thrown away.
Oh, wow, that's good.
You see, either the cross did all that we say it did, us and Christianity also, or it didn't. And it just so happens that the gospel is the only thing that supports that Jesus really did what he did, and it's really true. And there, we don't have to have any apologetics for it. We don't have to have any fence doctrines. It's been so long since I have had to say if and but or maybe about the gospel. It truly is let your yea be yea and your nay be nay. The only way you can do that is to know the gospel. I know of no other way, because Christianity is nothing but ifs, ands, buts, or maybes.
So one of the first things that we benefit from is being able to decide something for ourselves and feel unjudged because we've done it. Now, I want to explore the difference between redemption and salvation. If you ask 10 Christians, what is the difference between redemption and salvation? And I've done this, a room after room of people, anything up to a couple of hundred people, down to about 15. And here's what I found, and it's so consistent, it's almost scary, Michael. 8 out of 10 are going to say they're the same thing. 1 out of 10 is going to say, I don't know. And 1 out of 10 is going to say no. Now, redemption, as I understand it, applies to the world. Jesus was a world redeemer. Yes. Salvation, as I understand it, applies to me as an individual. Now, why is that?
Okay, that is partially true. In the big picture, that is the true statement, and that is what we're trying to get across to people is the difference between redemption and salvation. However,
when I'm using that word salvation, I'm using it the way that Christianity mostly uses it.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. But the thing that I want to clarify up front also is that redemption is a salvation. Salvation is the variable here. Salvation is applicable, is definable based on what it's applied to. The salvation that brings redemption, well, that redemption is the entire world. But then Paul spoke of the salvation of the soul. So here is a salvation now that is optional. One salvation, the redemption of the world, is not optional. This is not a and I'm reminded of the title of Bob Hines' book, which is
Redemption, a declaration for all, not a choice for a few.
Powerful. And that really is a very good way of saying it. Got a good title for a book, by the way.
Someone ought to think about that.
Somebody ought to write a book like that. So the experience of salvation on the personal level, and this is the personal thing that happens to us, and that is this very powerful thing that happens in the mind, and that is the personal part. About this, or should I say the individual part of this, because all of us are in need of salvation. All of us are in a particular space and time where that the impact of redemption is having its work, and its realities of redemption are having its works in our lives. And but that is not determined by God. God is not determining how much salvation my soul is getting. Do you realize you can actually determine for yourself how much salvation your soul's going to get?
How do you do that?
You decide what you're going to listen to. You decide that you're going to allow the facts of this gospel to be heard by the mind so that it can begin to think the way that the kingdom of God is set up.
You mean facts like no guilt, no shame, those kind of facts?
Yes, those things. And the fact of judgment is gone. The fact that sin has been taken away. All of these terms, which in Christianity, you don't even have the option to think about. Think about it. In Christianity, you don't even have the option to think of gospel concepts or the kingdom of God. It's not an option. To Christianity, everything is exactly the way it was. Get this, Bears. Everything is still exactly the way it was before the cross. The only difference is we now add the name of Jesus as a mystical, magical name and a way to repair all the things that were still wrong under the old covenant.
So, under Christianity, I'm still a sinner. Nothing changed there. There's still going to be a judgment day. Nothing changed there. I still have every right to feel guilt and shame as a result of the sin that I have. Nothing changed there.
And in fact, a responsibility to feel guilt and shame.
Oh, yeah. But I do have a hope. I mean, didn't Paul talk about a hope? I do have a hope now. I'm going to go to heaven. I mean, after I got to slog through this molasses down here of sin and guilt and shame, and then go through Judgment Day where heavens knows it's going to be burnt up, all the wood, hay, and stubble, and maybe I might have one little diamond gem to put in my crown.
Yes, and to every degree that Christianity has peddled that trash, it has enslaved its people.
Oh, you're very hard.
I said it really nice.
No, you didn't. Peddled is a very hard word.
I'm a nice guy. Peddling is what you do on your bicycle. Isn't that nice?
Yeah. Yeah. You didn't say bike.
Gospel Revolution.
Hi, this is Betty Lou Hagen. I'm calling from Gaborola, British Columbia in Canada. I just wanted to share a bit with you about my journey. It's been a long journey for me, about 30 years. I was dying of cancer and my marriage was breaking up and I was falling to pieces, and one day I experienced the love and forgiveness of Jesus. It was in 1979. And I went from total depression to being full of joy. And I was immediately surrounded by Word of Faith teaching. The person that reached out to me was in that faith. And so I listened to tapes and teachings from so many faith teachers, and my mind was totally immersed in word faith. Over a long period of time, I gradually lost what I experienced because I had so experienced just being totally loved and forgiven and accepted. And I started to feel fear of everything. I wasn't performing well enough. My family was going to hell. I just couldn't do it all. And I went from performance, or from relationship with Jesus, to performance. One night I went to a full gospel meeting. I think it was in the 1980s. And the speaker was Mike Williams. And I think this was his first series of tapes on the grace of God. And I purchased them. I listened to these tapes many, many times. And I felt almost like a lifeline was being tossed to me. But I continued with Word Faith for about 20 years. But at the same time, I listened to Mike's teachings as well. And I tried to balance Word Faith with the love, grace, and mercy of God. But I guess you probably know it doesn't work. You just get more confused. And in my heart, like, I knew something was wrong because I was so full of fear. But I assumed for a while it was just my poor performance. Eventually, my life fell apart, and I felt the same fear and desperation that I had before I experienced Jesus. And I was diagnosed with cancer again that had spread, and the church, because I wasn't healed, they shunned me. And my daughter was not performing well on the praise and worship team either, and so they just asked our family to leave the church because they thought we weren't good enough for them. And at that time, I felt totally dead inside. But I kept receiving Mike's teachings on Jesus and on the gospel of grace and peace and redemption for all. And I have come through the last 15 years to a measure of peace and joy again. I'm realizing now that Jesus has done so much more than I could have ever known or understood. His teaching, Mike's teaching on Jesus, rings really true in my heart. It brings joy and peace, and I'm gradually getting rid of the fear. And the scriptures are alive again in my heart and my mind. I have assurance that I'm loved and accepted by my Father and Jesus, regardless of my performance. It has been a long struggle to get rid of the religious stuff that I believed. But through the gospel of grace and peace, it's happening. The truth seems so obvious now, I can't even understand how I ever missed it. But I did. I don't have to really try and make the gospel or the New Testament fit together now, because I see what the scriptures are and what the epistles are and how the different writers had different opinions and different experiences. So I'm just really blessed by all that I have heard and learned. The truth is really the truth of the gospel. And I just want to thank you all for this ministry. Jesus is continuing to bring life to me through you all. Thank you very, very much. And hopefully we'll be in touch with you again. And thanks for sending me the tapes. Okay, bye-bye.
Gospel Revolution.
Now, what other things are valuable in the personal consideration of all of this?
Well, the other thing that is of extreme value is the equality that we have with each other. Let's just deal with that aspect. We know the whole reality of the gospel is the fact that God and man have become one. The reality that begins to sink in is that I am one with everyone else on the face of this planet. Now, that is a personal thing that begins to take place. I think that that's actually the level where that judgment begins to be removed. I remember early on in my understanding of the gospel, as I began to understand a little bit about guilt and judgment, I began to experience how much easier it was to let go of guilt than it was to let go of judgment. I was a willing participant in letting go of my own guilt. Oh, happy day. I don't have to feel guilty anymore. Hallelujah. The day Jesus washed my sins away. Oh, my goodness. You know, I could just sing and shout and dance about, and my guilt is gone. My shame is gone. It has been removed from me as far as the east is from the west, and it'll never even be brought up again, even as I finally did that in this cutting off of my confessions of sin and this great rise that it gave to this garden. I became aware of a garden, a cultivatable area of my being, of my mind, that could grow things and could conceive things and include things that just was, it was the secret garden. I'm telling you, it really is like secret garden. This garden has been shut off from everyone, but the gospel is the key to that secret garden. And I found a garden that could be cultivated. I found emotions that could be cultivated. I found feelings. I've found creativity that could be cultivated. I found respect that could be cultivated. I found a lack of need to defend myself.
All of these things are sounding like you learned to think differently.
I really did. It just opened up a whole new space of thinking, too. I think it's not only that I just learned to think differently, it's that I found a space to think in. I didn't have a space to think in. My way was narrow. And believe me, it was narrow and it was straight. And this person didn't find anything through that straight and narrow way. But I stepped into an area that was undiscovered to me in all of my days in Christianity. This was just an undiscovered. I get at a loss for words when I begin to describe the difference in my brain and my mind, in how it functions and where it functions now, as opposed to where and how it functioned while I was still in the bondage of Christianity. And it is just, it's a wholly different place. And it's described by what it is absent of, not by what is present. And I walked into this brand new space with every degree that I walked out from under guilt. But the other part of this that was not quite so easy in coming was judgment. Hey, I'm good to go. I don't have to feel guilty. But, you know, I wasn't sure I didn't want you to feel guilty. How do I?
Do you mean judging others or thinking that you yourself would be judged?
Judging others, letting go of judgment of others. Because that's the other part. When Paul taught on this in Romans, as he went into Romans 1, 2, and 3 especially, his entire focus was not about us being freed from guilt and a judgment to come, but freed from guilt and a judgment of each other.
Mm. So therefore, whoever you are, oh man, you're inexcusable.
Yes. That was the whole context. Who are you to judge? You know, then he began to give the understanding why the law was given. Even under the old covenant, the law was never designed for me to judge somebody else. According to Paul's teaching, the law was only supposed to be used for me to judge myself. In fact, Paul said, the moment I use God's law to judge the actions or deeds of someone else as to whether or not they are right with God, is the moment I have broken every law in the book.
Yeah, but it's much more fun the other way.
It really is. We are in perfect agreement. And that is the part that people have a hard time letting go of. As I started teaching this, over the decades. The funniest place that it seemed to show up was in married couples. I cannot tell you the times that whether the husband, the wife to the husband, that the revelation of the gospel hit them, and it was a very positive thing. But when they realized that, wait a minute, he's going to take this and think that he can do anything he wants to. So it was really odd. And all of these control mechanisms that were in place, they didn't fall away immediately. So here you have the gospel coming in, bam, shoveling out guilt and judgment both, but with all of the old triggered mechanisms still in place.
So how did you lose this judgmental thing? How did you lose it?
I am losing it.
So I'm not really sure what you're thinking about me. I see.
My judgment of others and their relationship with God, I do believe that is gone. When I search through myself, all you have to do is watch the news for a little while about all the things that's happening in the world. And you can pretty well gauge where you are with judgment. Now, but please do not get this confused with the judgment that the Bible talks about, which just means to have a discretion about you. That you're able to tell when something is appropriate and when something's not appropriate. When I was raising my children, I wanted them to have good judgment.
What can I do to encourage the growth of this salvation of my mind? What can I do to grow as a person in this gospel?
Well, as we've been talking about, the thing that the gospel does first off is just free us to live, Barris. Just living this out is so incredible. As we begin to just live this out and we do follow our heart, you begin to learn to trust your heart. The goal of the heart is not to make sure that you make all the right decisions. It's that you understand the things you need to understand. What the heart knows, the brain finally gets. Someone stood up in a meeting a number of years ago and says, but Mike says, what do I do if I follow my heart and it leads me into a ditch? And I said, well, the same heart that led you into the ditch will lead you out. If your heart is guiding you, what does your heart want for you? The heart wants for you to understand mentally and emotionally what the heart already knows. You can't begin to evaluate everything as to whether it's right or wrong in your decision-making process. It is the end result. What did I learn out of this?
And after all, I remember back in the day, I knew some just darling people, just lovely, lovely people, wouldn't hurt a fly. And they waited on the Lord and they asked the Lord what to do. I'm thinking of one guy. He had close to 3-figure income in the government. And he decided that God was telling him to give up his job and sell his house and just get a bus and take his family around Australia and just speak to people. Mm-hmm. Today he's broke. Today his family is split up. As this was happening, it was like watching a train wreck before your eyes. It was the saddest thing. But this is not one single isolated incident. We have seen this time and again. Exactly. I mean, if following the Lord was so great, you've still got to trust your heart when you follow the Lord to making a decision. So
it's really a bit ironic, isn't it?
Now, my friend Bill, he took me to have coffee with a fellow called Jim Palmer, a fascinating young fella. He was pastoring a church and went through one of the big seminaries and had the T-shirt, burnt it, and did the whole bit. And finally came out, he wrote a book, Jim Palmer, called Wide Open Spaces. And what I'm hearing you say when you say live and lean on your heart, you're saying, look, there's wide open spaces, go explore.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Now, what else should we do?
Well, we can't leave out the part that makes all of this work. If this salvation we're talking about has to do with the mind, then we really need to listen to the gospel with relative consistency. You and I, we've both committed to doing this show because we're on here every Thursday night and we get to talk about this. Regardless of what you have done during the week, regardless of what I've done during the week, even if I've given no attention to the gospel by listening to it or engaging someone else in a conversation. The thing that is ironic about it is that we have committed to the saving of our souls. You and I have a scheduled time for two things. Number one.
Don't forget the sked. I like my sked.
Your what?
You said we have a sked as well as a schedule. I like my sked. It's bright red and it goes very fast.
I don't even know what a sked is.
Well, you're the one who brought it up.
Did I say sked?
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Hey, just keep going.
So we have an appointment not only to record a show, but we have an appointment for the salvation of our soul.
Every week.
Every week.
At least.
Yes. And that doesn't count the times that we get to get on the phone and talk about what we're going to talk about.
We often get saved during the week.
Yeah, it can even happen right in the middle of the week. It's really amazing. So, it's just like the process that I'm going through right now for the meetings in Calgary. Oh my gosh. What we've got coming up, folks, is just so powerful. I'm almost speechless at the topic that we're going to be covering when we get up to Calgary. But Bears and I have had a few conversations about it right now. I'm relying on Bears a great deal in some of the research on this. So all the parts of it that people find offensive and just was over the top, I'll just go ahead and know before I ever recorded in January, that part was all Bears.
Yep, that was me. Me and my sked.
So all of that, and then the other conversations that I am really privileged to have. This week, we both have had phone calls, and this past week from people that are so appreciative of this program, and I got a call from someone that listens, and they had just finished the Mystery of Faith, speaking of meetings in Calgary, Alberta, which was one of the last, is either the last time or time before, of the meetings that I did in Calgary entitled The Mystery of Faith. I get this message left on my phone, and it's like, goodness gracious, if I ever needed to be encouraged, I just need to save this message here. But that person had gone through a magnificent salvation process just by listening to The Mystery of Faith. And goodness, I certainly got encouragement from it because the response was effusive. Let me see if I can remember the term. You deserve an Oscar for this. And so I'm not going to disagree. The degree that he thinks I deserve an Oscar for this is the degree that it affected his soul, the degree that it affected his mind, the way that he thinks. And that was the thing that was exciting about that.
So, firstly, we just live. Secondly, we lean on our hearts, and we just listen to the gospel.
Just listen.
No, just
listen.
Just
and converse and communicate the gospel. It doesn't have to be 24 hours a day. I know you remember, as I do, in Christianity, we couldn't talk unless we talked in Christianese. I didn't talk about the weather. I didn't talk about politics. I didn't talk about the news. I didn't talk about my health. I didn't talk about, and now that I'm in my 60s, half of my conversations with my other friends are about my health.
No wonder you're such a lonely person.
I know. If you talk to me, I'm going to tell you about my lab work. So,
So live, lean, listen. Anything else we need to do?
Live, lean, listen, and lab work. Man, I'm telling you. <greatest things. laughs> The four L's. Tell people how wonderful your lab work has turned out. No, the personal aspect of this gospel is obvious. And again, the odd thing is that the thing that people think that the understanding they've gained in the gospel has taken away the personal aspect of it is the fact that they've actually gained the personal aspect of the gospel for the first time in their lives. And you've lost something, but you've lost something that's already been done away with in the first place. And that's this, you know, what is the number one key component to prayer? Number one, it's confession of sin. Everything falls under that heading because, number one, you can't get your prayers heard unless your sins are all taken care of anyway.
Got to start every good prayer with a bit of confession.
You absolutely do, because you're not going to get heard if you've got any sin in your life.
And you know that there's sin in your life anyway, because even the ones that you know about, you know that there's ones you don't know about.
Yes. Of course, we had ways of covering those sins of omission, commission, permission, remission, transmission. And then those sins, it was just an out-and-out mission.
So. Yeah, really. We used to call them besetting sins.
Besetting sins.
Yeah, but we were just setting about how to get them without anyone pointing out is what they were. We be setting to see.
Exactly.
If the Bible is all about Jesus, don't you think that most churches would mention him with at least the same frequency as they mention all of their favorite dogmas and doctrine and all those rules of your particular brand of religion? Tithing, moralism, Old Testament law, abortion, gays, politics, all hail the leader, persecution, the end times, don't forget the bloody rules, God's perfect will for your life, fleeing youthful lusts, rock music, speaking in tongues, the coming kingdom, worldliness and how to escape it, those pesky rules, don't forget them, heresy, prophecy, soul-winning missions, offerings, wrong doctrine, right doctrine, and don't forget all those bloody rules, relationships, long hair, short hair, dyed hair, liberalism, greasy grace, Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve, dispensationalism, and rules, rules, never ending bloody rules, and Calvinism, Arminianism, a missionary service, Sunday school, swearing and cussing, besetting sins, sexual purity, oh, and give us some more rules, won't you? False prophets, confession, dress code, mixed swimming, dancing, movies, television, dating, oh, and did I mention the freaking rules?
Hey, are there any other L's in this, Michael? Or have you reached the end of your L's? Live, lean, listen, and lab work.
Hey, listen, I'm sure we can L this to pieces. But if you take in the concept of the observer in the gospel, is you just look, just watch. Watch all of this take place. What do you do when you follow your heart? Watch. Just look and learn. I never will forget. I wish I could remember the name of the guy, but he's a gentleman that is highly respected, very successful, very entrepreneurial. And I'm sorry, I just can't think of his name. But I saw him in an interview, and he was being asked the question about being successful. And he said that he thought that success was way overrated when it comes to learning about life. And he brought out this point. He said, how many people have you ever heard say they had this absolute problem-free venture into business, relationship, or whatever it might be, and them stop and say, you know, this is what I learned from that? He said, we don't learn from our successes. We only learn from our failures. And I remember when he said that, and I thought, most people don't learn from their failures. Most people get guilt-ridden because of their failures. Most people get distraught because of their failures. But what he was talking about really was truth and was a gospel concept. When you are out from under guilt and judgment, you can observe even what is perceived to be a failure on your part or anyone else's. And that's where you can learn. It just blew me away. He says, what can be learned from success? And the interviewer was sitting there looking at him like, I don't know.
And this successful interviewer.
Yes. Interviewing this successful person. And this man said, absolutely nothing is learned from success. Now, at the time, of course, I'm still learning more and more about the gospel, which is, I hope, you know, every day of my life. But this made sense to me. But I also realized that the only way that you really could learn from the parts of your life that were not successful is if they were absent of guilt and judgment. And you could see that in this gentleman. You could see that absence of Christianity, that absence of the insistence that we weigh everything out and judge ourselves based on sin and the law and judgment and God's justice and all of this, because we know that those things are already taken care of. Therefore, we can observe. We can look. I can actually look. I've talked to people, and you have too, Varys, that if you bring up something from the past, they just about freak out. It's like, no, don't make me look at that. Don't make me look at that again. And I am just really amazed that in my own life, which, we're talking about the personal effect, because I've got to talk about me, not about somebody else. And I always enjoy talking about me.
Of course.
So I don't know of a part of my life that is off base for somebody to bring up and talk about. People ask, Mike, is there any progress at all in your relationship with your daughters and your four grandkids? And people bring that up, and then they, out of the kindness of their heart, they say, I don't mean to bring up something that's difficult. And I'm almost surprised by it, because talking about it isn't difficult for me. And revisiting that and looking at it, even if I would have been completely at fault in this cataclysmic and sudden loss of relationship with my own children, two of my own children anyway, it still wouldn't be off the grid. I can look at it and talk about it without this grief there anymore. Did I go through grief? Yes, I did go through grief. Did I go through loss? A horrible loss. But here's the power of the gospel, and that is that the heart is already designed to incur, endure, and recover from all loss, no matter what it is. But it can only do that with the nourishment that the gospel gives to the mind to be in absolute agreement. And in that environment, we can move forward.
Now, what I think I heard you say was you learn nothing from success. You only learn from your failures. But when you are governed by a mindset where failure must be associated with guilt and shame and judgment, either in yourself or in anyone else, failure has nothing to teach you either. But if you look, yes, okay, so you learn from observing yourself, observing your responses, observing how you've changed, observing the differences in the mic of today from the mic of 10 years ago. Have I got this right?
Yes.
Hello, everyone. My name is Billy. I'm from Kitco, Florida. And I just want to say hi and that I love the Gospel Revolution. And I just wanted to talk about a couple of things. The Gospel Revolution is all about love and acceptance and being the observer. Mike has a podcast on that most powerful position, and the only position we have is that of the observer. And something I notice about what facilitates us in being the observer is being present in an attitude of non-judgment, where if I enter into the commentary in my mind that wants to comment and set forth its opinion on whatever it is I'm looking at, I lose that place of the observer. The observer doesn't comment as such the way our minds are used to commenting on what it is we're looking at. So if you want to be more of the present of the observer of your life, refrain from judgment and, well, opinion. What I think about a situation is not the observer. The observer doesn't comment in that sense of, I think this is whatever. So I just want to encourage everyone to be mindful of the present moment. It's the only moment you have. Thanks.
When you're feeling down or you got the case of the blues, why don't you listen to the Gospel Revolution?
Now, onto the collective. What value is the gospel to humanity as a collective again?
Mm. The value of it comes from the same source of information, and that is that we are one. The the world's concept that there's great power in this number one is showing up everywhere in the arts. You just can't get away from it. I mean, watch Lion King. Goodness gracious. The power of one. Pokemon, you know, it shows up everywhere. This reality that we know that in this equation of one, therein lies our ability to do what we can't do individually. So collectively, and this is what led to the question that you had for Mike and the one that we led into the conversation last week, and that is, so does that mean you are God? The question is that not is any individual God, but because this is a world redemption, see, now that we get away from a personal redeemer, we get away from the personal part of this, and we're able to look at it in the collective sense. And that is that, yes, we are God in the world. The collective mass of humanity, we are it. It's the only God you're ever going to see, folks. The only God you're ever going to see is the faces you see when you're at the supermarket, faces that you see on the news.
Well, hang on. What about all those lovely old hymns? Face to face, I shall see him.
Yeah, well, yeah. We'll save those to see how they turn out in the sweet by and by. But right now, face to face, you do see him. And when I look into the face of everyone, that, you know, if you look at people's ability to help people, the human race, there has to be an absence of a division in your heart and your mind of people. Researchers who work on cures for cancer can't work on cures for cancer for white people.
Oh, hang on. You mean I can't look at Americans like they're Americans?
Well, the things that divide us are all superficial. The first thing that we look upon everyone is that is God. That is God in the earth. Doesn't make any difference what nationality that they are.
Well, hey, what about Arabs?
They are God in the earth. And it depends on how we work this out together to the expression that God has in all the things that we know about God in this planet.
That's a bridge too far for some people.
That is a bridge too far for many. But if that bridge cannot be crossed, we have no hope.
You've reminded me of a story that hit the newspapers a couple of decades ago. There was a teacher in a Brisbane playground at lunchtime, and the kids were playing, and they some of the newcomers, some of the Lebanese kids. We had a lot of influx from Lebanon at one stage. And one of the Lebanese kids was, they were having problems. This little kid tugged the teacher's dress and said, "Teacher, those Lebanese kids say that they're not like us. They say that they're different from us Aussies." And the teacher looked down into a Vietnamese face. This child thought he was an Australian. Mm. The difference had gone. The bridge had been crossed for him.
Yes. And I think this is the powerful place that we are headed to.
What would the bottom line be of the value of redemption to the world? What's the bottom line on it?
It's the very expression of God in the earth. It is the advancement of humanity to its highest aspirations. And that through science, technology, the possibilities of the connectivity. Look at what has happened over the last few years of this planet being connected through communication and how these barriers are falling. Paris, we're going to have to get used to being one because we're becoming one by virtue of technology. Technology is forcing us to understand the gospel because these barriers are falling.
Now, last week you mentioned Malala, the little 16-year-old girl who stood and looked terrorism in the face and said, "No, I don't think so."
Yeah.
This week there was what looked to me to be like a precocious child, except that at 11 years old he has just invented a way of sandbagging against floods that the experts are saying this is something like an amazing breakthrough.
My goodness.
Amazing stuff, isn't it? A little child shall lead them. Huh.
Yeah. Barris, it just must speak to the God in us that the things that are so difficult for us to learn, the next generation seems to be born with that technology in them. I mean, there's things about the computer that I still have difficult. I don't even know if I want to learn it. I want to learn it enough to use it and not be used by it. I think it's using me more than I am using it.
Uh-oh.
But a 5-year-old seems to know more about computers, what they are, how they function, and understand this stuff better than I do as a 61-year-old who's been trying to learn about it, for the last 15 years of my life. And here a 5-year-old, newborn comes into this world, and it seems that they're pre-adapted to it.
I just put that down to Alzheimer's disease kicking in, mate. But maybe it's different for you.
We could chalk it up to anything, but I don't know what you chalk up this intuitive knowledge that these children have that the last generation struggled so hard to conceive, and now they just seem to be born with it inside of them. It's really amazing. Barris, I think we have no reason to do anything but look to the future with great expectations of marvelous things to come. That does not exclude the difficulties that we have in getting there. But you know what I refuse to do, Barris? I refuse to wait till we get there to enjoy here. I'm not going to do it. I most likely won't be around when a lot of the things that we're talking about now will ever be here. But, you know, two of my favorite shows still is The Waltons and The Little House on the Prairie. But when you look back at just that time in our very recent history of this planet and the things that they did not have at their access and the things they couldn't do. I mean, I was watching the episode that I just watched on the Waltons was them getting their first telephone. And it was a bit inaccurate in that their first telephone had a dial on it. Now, anybody that lived during this time knows that the first telephones did not have a dial on them. And you picked up the phone, and when you picked up the phone, the operator would come on and say, "Operator, may I have your number, please?" And you'd give them the number. There was no dial to it. You didn't dial anything.
Hey, so, do you remember party lines?
Oh, yeah. We never had one, but my aunts and uncles who lived more up in the mountains, they had party lines. I thought they were wonderful. I would go spend the night with them and go and just pick up the phone and listen in on people. So
let's just leave the next generation trying to figure out what we've been actually talking about there. But anyway,
I know, you know, they're not, it's that now, isn't that funny? That's the mystery to them. The mystery to them is not a handheld device that puts each and every individual in potential contact with every other individual on the face of planet Earth. The thing that is inconceivable to them is a party line.
I got the perfect song for that.
Uh-oh. Let's hear it.
Operator, give me information. Information. Give me long distance. Long distance.
And so it is that we must leave you, folks. We love you one and all, and we especially thank those who, with their financial support, keep this weekly PowerCast going out every week. If you'd like to join them in increasing our coverage of this gospel of grace and peace, call our office at area code 321-220-4373 and speak to Jeffrey. If you would like to leave a message for the show, simply telephone us at 234-564-0971. Our web address is www.gospelrevolution.com, and we are always up for a Facebook chat at Friends of Mike Williams and the Gospel Revolution. Thanks to Marcel Roos in the Netherlands, all the gospel all the time is being broadcast 24/7 at gospelrevolution.radiostream123.com. And so it is good night from myself, Beres Bartlett, from the Little House on the Prairie.
And from Walton's Mountain here in beautiful Houston, where it came a deluge outside and rained for about 3 hours, made my last few hours of sleep so absolutely wonderful. It stopped raining. It's overcast. It's just beautiful outside. I just don't know why everybody doesn't live in Houston.
And in other news this week, Mike is asleep on Thursday nights at 5. Remember to join us again
on Thursday nights at 5 o'clock in the morning.
yeah, it's technology, mate. It's a future. Remember to join us again next week, same time, same channel, where we're going to do the same thing almost all over again.
It's always better.
Gospel Revolution.